for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Pleb Underground, episode 26, not 27, not 3 to the 3 or 2 to the 4 plus 11. In your ear first, time chain stats, it's the numbers. Satoshi adjusted the difficulty, now flexible encumbers, to keep mu equaling 10, Poisson distribution. When sovereign on layer 2, you must achieve retribution. Against a partner trying to steal, better use the watchtowers. You don't want your funds 6 feet under the flowers. Last week, I had an accident. I may have chipped a tooth. Doctors did the work, you can clearly see the proof. Too long waiting for those 35 facial stitches. I came for the memes, but I'm staying for the riches. Sorry, still working towards those riches, right? Now, antibiotics to fight infection. I got the prescription. My life isn't ordinal. How's that for an inscription? When logic is in place, who cares about attribution? It's about the game theory, not about the flexecution. This past week, I had some fever. Herbal analgesia, the best pain reliever. Medicated high achiever, take a pause, take a breather. Time for recuperation, time for some rest. Prayers coming in to help me through the test. Time for recovery, no need to feel depressed. We're back for another. There ain't no second best. Pleb Underground. Let's go.
Walton, absolutely awesome. I'm really glad that that accident wasn't worse. And man, that is an insane story. Joining us today, very special guest. We've got Eric Yakes. He is the author of The Seventh Property, Bitcoin and the Monetary Revolution. Eric, thank you so much for joining us on Pleb Underground, man.
What up, dudes?
Sweet. All right, he's ready. He's ready for the Pleb Underground. Okay, guys, we are diving into the numbers. Here we go.
Yeah, the numbers, of course, by Time Chain Stats. Also, check out Time Chain Calendar for an excellent way to browse the time chain.
At the time of this recording, the block height is 775,921. The Bitcoin price, 21,760. Total public Lightning capacity, 5,363.38 BTC. Moscow time, 4596. And the chain rewrite days, 765. All right, guys. For the numbers, we've got, let's go take a look. Got a tweet from Lynn Alden. The U.S. Treasury Department actually published this. Okay. And Eric, I don't know if you could see this, okay, but this, it says here, chart two, the historical and current policy projections for debt held by the public, 1980 to 2096. Now, if I understood this chart correctly, because essentially along this axis, we've got debt held by the public as a percent of the GDP. Along here, we've got the years. Am I to understand that as a percent of the GDP, debt held by the public, is that real? Is that 400%? Does that make sense?
Yeah. This is I honestly don't know what the fuck they were thinking when they published this, but yeah, that is real, yep. Which means that the interest expense is going to be quite a bit higher, and the GDP is not going to be able to pay for that. And I think that they're just using it to like posture how they want the public to be thinking about this. But yeah, it's absolutely absurd. It's absolutely impossible that we'd ever be able to get to these kind of proportions.
So let me ask you this, right? Because when I look at charts like this, I say to myself, how do we possibly dig ourselves out of this mess? I mean, we're seeing right now what the US government is doing. And we know that it's like they're walking on eggshells with the interest rates. What do they have left? What can they try at this point?
There's like, you know, there's more technical stuff that they can do. They have little like short-term fixes, but there's no long-term considerations that will actually solve this problem. The fact is that they're between a hard place and a rock, and it's either the economy crashes and they lose some sort of monetary status, or we have Bitcoin take everything over.
we're pretty much at that point, right? I have heard some talk, though. I have heard some talk of the trillion. I think it's the trillion-dollar coin.
Yeah.
I mean, just for the sake of it, what is? I mean, first of all, in my mind, I just don't see who is going to accept this trillion-dollar coin, and why. Why would they accept it? I mean,
I'll take it. You give it to me. I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it. And I'll buy Bitcoin with it. Let's go.
Who's going to buy it? But let me ask you, like, Eric, what do you think the feasibility of that even is?
I remember when this popped up during the last time. What was that? Yeah, that was last year.
They mentioned it a few times.
Yeah, it was this whole thing. I actually got blocked by a few of the people on Twitter who were debating some of this stuff. But there's a few, like, major proposals. Opponents that were trying to drive it. I think that guy Rohan Gray blocked me in some of the debates. He's just like a lawyer who knows how, like, the semantic language works within legal terms. And basically the idea is that, like, within the Constitution, there's certain rights and how, you know, the government is able to implement coinage, but they're not actually enabled to create money. So, like, we can kind of make these little tweaks to, like, how that looks. And we say, well, if we can create coinage, then we could create this coin that's theoretically valued at some absurd amount, and therefore we can use that as a form of payment to pay off the treasury's balance sheet with more debt. And it's just a way of really instantaneously creating debt without having to go through the Federal Reserve, and it just shows how screwed up this entire system is, the fact that people are even proposing that they want to, like, be pushing this type of a solution. And, you know, ultimately what that would be doing directly to how the money supply would function. It's screwing with numbers on a balance sheet, and it impacts people's lives.
Monetary alchemy. Walton.
Yeah.
Walton, any thoughts on this before we move out of the numbers and into rent?
I mean, obviously it's utter nonsense, isn't it? Like, just kind of, it's all mirrors, right? At the end of, like, politics is, it's all politics, right? It's all convincing people that it's a good thing when actually it's a good thing for a select few. It's nothing new. It's nothing, you know, I mean, maybe this, you know, $1 trillion coin is the new thing, but, like, at the end of the day, it's, can you pull the chart up again, Phil? Do you mind?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, this is this showing the debt against GDP? Can you just zoom a little bit? It's debt. What's that? Debt as a percentage of GDP against time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so there's some inflection points, right? Like, a key one being 2020, when it goes from being, you know, relatively flat to really taking off. Now, yeah, like, what's happened over those past couple years? Oh, interesting.
It's tough, huh? It's tough to figure out what's happened in those last couple of years.
Lots of politics, huh?
Would you suggest that the majority of the world's a majority of the US dollars were printed in that time?
I mean, I learned today that not only does Bill Gates own the majority of farmland, he now owns the majority of seeds in America, as well as, you know, apparently making hundreds of millions off vaccines, and now supposedly, you know, thinking he's like the world's chief medical officer. And he's a programmer. He's a computer scientist. He's not a doctor.
Like, yeah, but he's rich, man.
Like, people who have a lot of money, they want to do philanthropy, but ultimately it's just PR, like, to offset all the terrible things that they do. Now, tax deductible offsetting of all the terrible things that you do. The world is not headed in a good direction with the Cantalonians, you know, thinking that they know how people should live their lives and tell them how to live their lives, and if they don't comply, then just force it through manipulative advertising, government compliance, and ultimately violence. Like, it's disgusting. But hey, thank fuck for Bitcoin. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I just want to add one last thing before we wrap up the segment. I saw something today. I think fellow Bitcoiner Dick Whitman tweeted this out, and it mentioned something about Bill Gates explaining a term called climate innovation. All right, so get ready. This is the new round.
He's talking about the next pandemic, right?
Yeah, like... no, of course. No, dude, for this guy, man, he's trying to fast forward till he's king. He's like, he's just trying to hit fast forward. How can I speed this up so I'm number one a lot faster? Okay. Anyways, all right. We are moving on over to Wrecked. Wrecked is brought to you by Crypto Cloaks. Check them out, cryptocloaks.com. And they also have a brand new address for Europe, cryptocloaks.co.uk. Use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND for 5% off. Check it out, guys. I've got the Bitcoin grenade. You can store your open dime in here. Very cool. You can also get the bigger grenade and store a signing device. And pretty awesome, the 3D printed Bitcoin astronaut. Check them out, cryptocloaks.com. Use Pleb Underground for 5% off.
Guys, so for Wrecked this week, there's a couple of major stories. At first, you can see my face. It was slightly wrecked last week. I'm in recovery. I'm invincible. Nothing can kill me, not even a heavyweight hitting me here. I chipped a tooth. I had a bunch of stitches. Let's go. Like, minor wrecked, but, you know, bear markets are for building. If you're going to lift heavy weights, sometimes, you know, sometimes the gravity is too much, you know, things happen, but, I've been back in the gym already this week twice, so we keep going. Anyway, next story on Wrecked, and this one I've been waiting for a long time. This is poetic, righteous, and yeah, maybe it's a bit status to kind of be in support of this sort of thing, but I don't really care because Bitcoin's actually censorship resistant, so fuck all you shitcoiners. Anyway, let's see what old Gary has to say, shall we? So let's see what Gary has to say
here.
What
does stake have to do with our securities laws? That's STAKE, not STEAK. In the crypto markets, there are various ways to validate data stored on crypto ledgers, called blockchains. And one of these ways is called staking. Investors lock up their tokens in escrow.
No, nonsense, Gary. No, there is one way to secure things, and that is through proof of work. If you do anything else, as clearly as now everyone else is doing, pretty much, then quite clearly, even more so, it is a security. And what Gary was talking about there was the staking of Ethereum and other shitcoins, Ethereum being the chief shitcoin, of course, on a variety of platforms, Coinbase, Kraken, etc., etc. Kraken were the first to be charged, Coinbase soon after, Coinbase deciding that actually they're gonna try and hit back, and they're gonna fight the SEC over staking. I don't imagine that's gonna be very successful in any way, shape, or form, but they have to be seen to be trying, right? And Marty Bent asks the question of, well, when all of these exchanges are forced to stop staking ETH, what actually happens? Because you can't unstake ETH. So what happens, guys?
Yeah, I think that, like, I was reading about it, but it's basically like they're going to have some sort of other method where they're effectively, like, they're economically, like, distributing staked assets back to people, which I think will be probably a pretty massive shit show because most of the people involved in this don't know how to operate outside of like an account and exchange anyways. But I'm not even positive about that. But like my general take on all of it is, you know, the SEC is bullshit. They have no idea what they're doing. People are getting defrauded. And the whole point of this, I think, is like private markets need to solve this from the ground up. We have to get Bitcoin into the hands of more people. We got to get education out there. And, you know, more people have to be aware of like what the fuck's actually going on and how big this is, and that they can't keep getting caught up in all this bullshit that's just going to be delaying the inevitable over the years. So it's a piece of education. It's all about... people need to get a better understanding. Private markets can, you know, fix this. Doesn't mean there's not going to be problems in Bitcoin. And, you know, down the line, we're going to have plenty of issues too, as more and more people start to realize Bitcoin's value. There's going to be companies, there's going to be centralized services. They're going to do bad shit. And not just the nature of free markets in general, but it's better than the SEC cobbling around and fucking things up and missing the biggest fraud in the industry.
No, it's very well said. And actually, you know, while you were explaining that, I was just thinking to myself, okay, so if we look, like, let's say we're looking outside of our echo chamber, right? And we just take a look at this, it almost makes it in a really sly way that the SEC doing this kind of validates their shitcoin use case, even though it's not real. But essentially, right. by them giving this level of importance to it, it's to say, well, look, see, these are valid products. We just need to regulate them. It's like, no. This is not a freaking valid product. This is absolute garbage. Okay, that it's vaporware. That simply just, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it fleeces people and it creates absolutely nothing. Like, it's economic activity for the sake of economic activity with nothing actually tethered to reality. So, it actually kind of bothers me, even a bit, you know, like, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have done this, but I just don't think that as Bitcoiners, we should have, you know, like, not everybody cheered for it, but I'm just saying there's two sides to this coin, because now there's a whole bunch of shitcoiners that are going to sit there and say, you see, look, we've got a valid product and it's going to be regulated soon. So it's all good. Come on board. It's like, no, you misunderstood.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I think it's tricky because, like, you know, like, a lot of these arguments of, like, you know, what is and isn't valuable are all just, they're all, like, really theoretical at the end of the day. And, like, I think that with it's hard to get people deep enough to realize that, sure, like, in terms of, like, either the theory or the technology, there are, like, you know, all these bad things that occur in crypto are all wrapped in some sort of truth. Like, you know, it's like there's some sort of concept or idea that people supposedly believe is coming. And I'm not saying that I don't think, you know, nothing valuable has come out of crypto. I think that there are, like, pretty interesting technologies that have come from being this, like, super, you know, high time preference form of experimentation. There's, like, some things. Do I think that they're needed today?
Can you give me an example, Eric? Really. Can you give us an
example? Yeah, in terms of, like, you know, with, like, liquidity pools and flash loans, I think that in the long term, not in the near term, when we start to see financial applications build out that are, like, Bitcoin native, those are going to be pretty valuable technologies. And, like, you know, for people who hate fractional reserve banking, that'll probably be, you know, we're talking about a free market here. I'm sure that we're going to see fractional reserve banking.
You can already do that, right? With, like, Fediments and Cashew, right? You can have essentially, I believe so.
Yeah. So it's like, it's possible. These are all, like, new concepts. We haven't seen, like, you know, full-blown markets of liquidity build out on them yet. But the idea is, like, long term, you have the ability to run a fractional institution with this technology. And just like with, you know, Bitcoin, people can use the technology however they see fit. The question kind of becomes, like, what's the market going to choose? And one of the key things is, like, fractional reserve banking typically exists and emerges in private markets because there's a lot of inefficiency that exists between, like, information transparency and how quickly capital can be moved around. So, like, innovations like flash loans will actually be pretty valuable in, like, keeping that kind of a system in check. Like, if we assume a world where we have a bunch of Fediments all over the world and that's what people are using for, like, community custody, then what's going to keep that system in check from turning it into some sort of, like, fractional reserve system? And it's the ability for people to speculate against those. So if you have a federation that's basically like a bank, and it's like, okay, well, what prevents them from wanting to be fractional? Well, you could have some, like, think about it, like a fund or a person or whoever it is. They might have a bunch of money, and they'll say, I think that federated mint is not fully backed in Bitcoin, and I'm going to speculate on that. It would be really easy for them to go take out a flash loan and scale the liquidity of an entire pool and just short the shit out of that bank, and then put, like, basically they short it, they take out this big loan that allows them to, like, buy up a ton of e-cash within that market and then redeem it all at the Federation to get their reserves out. And that would, like, put that fractional institution out of business, which I think is valuable because, like, if technologies like that exist, that will be a really strong way of keeping a system like that in check.
It's very interesting. As you were explaining that, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, Bitcoin changes us, right? Like, we, as Bitcoiners, you know, we all know that that saying, and it just made me think, well, so right now we have fiat incentives, so to speak, right? We have a shitty money, so it incentivizes us to try to gain as much of it as quickly as possible so that we could turn it into, you know, put it into an investment vehicle to turn it into more. So, like, maybe not in the near term, but maybe in the far off Bitcoin future, the quality of the speculative assets that we have may be better, because if we imagine a Bitcoin standard, we imagine that, you know, our incentives on Bitcoin are better, so to speak, right? Because we can actually think in terms of low time preference. I'm just making the assumption that maybe the quality of the speculative assets would be better. So, not to say that what you're saying wouldn't happen, but just to say that anytime people would speculate on, you know, any type of technology or any type of product, that possibly it would be of higher quality. Who knows?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think the whole idea is that we want money to be a form of information and not something that's manipulated. Mm-hmm. And, like, when money is a form of information that's giving everybody in the market, like, the proper feedback, because it's not constantly in flux all the time, that's really valuable. That decreases malinvestment. And also, when we don't have arbitrarily expanded credit through fiat central banking, that also changes the entire game. You know, like, right now, a good way, like, when you think about the whole idea of, like, money printing, when we go back to this idea of, like, minting the coin and all that, like, the way that the fiat system works is, like, complex. And I think it's complex for, like, you know, there's a reason that they want it to be so complex. But the idea is, like, if, you know, money gets, quote unquote, printed by the Fed, or if we have, like, QE or something, does that actually get into the economy and ultimately expand the money supply, which not all the times it does. And the reason that it's not really getting into the economy right now, and this is also caveated with me talking specifically about QE, when we printed and sent checks throughout the US, like, that money got into the economy. That is inflationary. Yeah. And that's why we saw all that. But, like, just with, like, QE, it's like QE is basically a way for the Federal Reserve to give banks an incentive to lend more. So by lowering interest rates and by constantly giving them more and more loanable amounts on their balance sheet, they've pretty much pushed lending to, like, the furthest extreme they can. So if you think about it, like, theoretically, like, there's some sort of, like, natural rate. If, like, the Federal Reserve was gone tomorrow, we had, like, private markets that are saying, like, okay, we want to make investments in people. Some of those investments are going to be just, like, I might take my savings and go start a business, and I'm not even going to bring in investors. And then, you know, it's an argument for hyper-Bitcoinization, where people are just going to have a lot more wealth. A lot more people might just be financing things themselves. And then there's the idea of, like, okay, well, I'm not going to go give somebody a loan, but I'm going to go make an equity investment into a company. And that's another form of investment. I think on a Bitcoin standard, that's going to be a much bigger proportion of the market. Mm-hmm. But there's still value in credit, because, like, if you're an entrepreneur and you say, I want to go start a business, I don't have enough money to start that business, I need to go bring in investors, then would you rather have somebody own your company that you start, or would you rather take on a loan that you can pay back and then own your company one day? So, like, as long as that exists, we're still going to have...
You're going to have your investors are going to have more, like, assets themselves. And so, like, they're going to have Bitcoin to be investing rather than... the current system where the people who've got the money have got it cheap on credit, again, from someone, from, like, it's yeah. About, like, where the wealth is held, and in the future, in theory, a lot I mean, you know, we all believe here that a lot of wealth is going to be held in Bitcoin. And so the people that have a lot of Bitcoin, I think are going to be the ones who start buying up the productive businesses. Only the productive businesses in the fiat world that are actually producing real value. None of this fiat nonsense, none of this like rent seeking. Like they're going to try and, you know, really like improve the efficiency of businesses. I mean, yes, you see some fiat businesses like Amazon, I think, you know, provide a real like use, like, you know, in terms of enabling the convenience for the consumer, like that, and that to some degree, convenience can be a useful thing, right? Saving yourself time is a big thing. Now, if you're not really saving a lot of time and you're not really saving money, then yeah, it's not. But things that can save you time, you should really like, they're useful technologies.
Anyway, I agree.
You know, the point is, there are some productive businesses. We're going to see that being transferred to Bitcoiners. I think there's going to be a significant amount of equity in the world of those businesses.
Right, exactly. So like credit's going to be a lot smaller too, which is another argument for like, will we even see like full-scale fractional reserve systems? If you like imagine the world and you're like, how much of that is represented by Bitcoin versus credit in 100 years? If, you know, today it's all represented by credit, you know, money itself is credit. What proportion will that be on a Bitcoin standard? Maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 20%. I don't really know. But that might be so small that it doesn't even make sense to have like fractional reserve type systems anyways. It'll just be kind of like an afterthought, like an obscure type of financing that people use. I'm trying to remember my original point I was getting at.
I wonder if it changes the incentives in terms of the if on a Bitcoin standard, people can just work and save, and prices should be deflationary, and they don't need to do all these kind of financial games. Whereas at the moment, on an inflationary fiat currency, everyone has to do these financial games. Everyone has to take on additional risk just to try and save the same amount of value. Not even like to gain value. Like you have to take on additional risk, unless you're buying Bitcoin, you have to go out in the markets, not because you're equipped to do so or you want to, but because you have to. That should change. And I think as a consequence, like if you have all these professionals who do you know, professionals and tradespeople and all these different people who provide value, if they're just saving in Bitcoin, I don't think they're gonna think, oh yeah, okay, and I need to now have all these equities. I mean, yeah, they start, you know, as they save money, they maybe buy businesses, but that's, again, it's going to be more about what are real revenue streams that are sustainable, and that's the only diversification against Bitcoin there is.
Yeah, it's gonna change the world of investment really significantly. We're gonna kill off a lot of bullshit investing that's going on today. We're gonna be investing in things that are actually valuable. But I think it's kind of like when, you know, like for like Bitcoiners, it's important to, when, you know, it's part of like human nature. Whenever something really bad happens in our lives, we typically and we figure it out. We're like, oh, I did something that was bad. And then we go to the other end of the spectrum and we say, okay, I'm going to stop doing that. When a lot of times the thing is kind of like, oh, we need to be in the middle. It's just like, you don't want to overcompensate a certain direction. And I think it's going to be kind of similar to that. It's like, there's a lot of ideas in the economy that like fiat money is corrupted and has made like horrible things, and they're nothing what they were originally intended to be. But there's still like valuable things that exist, and there's still valuable things that I think will continue to exist. And I think it's good for Bitcoiners to like keep that perspective of like, you know, Bitcoin's going to make everything just have the right incentives, and we don't have to throw everything out the window. There's going to be valuable businesses. There's going to be, there's still going to be shit businesses too. Like that's the nature of a free market. Like bad shit happens because people are allowed to choose. And like, that's the primary goal with everything, I think, is to make sure that we build a system where people are allowed to choose. And when people get into like, we're all going to have a different perspective of like, what's valuable to me versus what's valuable to somebody else. I would never buy an NFT, but I will like adamantly support people who want to freely, you know, throw their money into whatever shit they want to throw it into.
If you
want
to go be a retard, welcome to Bitcoin. Like, but
right.
To support your shit, yeah. Briefly, before we move on to some very important hopium, I'll share this, and it'll be in the links for the show. A little fuck up once again of fake Toshi. I will read it briefly for you here. In Craig's fantasy, the coins weren't even his, but they belonged to a trust for which other people were beneficiaries, including his second wife's minor children. If any of it were real, it would be completely reasonable for the court to appoint independent representation for the trust to look out for their interests and likely seek damages for Wright's grossly incompetent administration of the trust's assets, not having actual backups, storing them on a network-attached computer, wiping the computers, failing to attempt to recover the data from a cloud storage where it would be undeleted with a button press for 30 days, keeping the assets as Bitcoin when he's been an outspoken critic, to say it lightly, of Bitcoin and the people he claims are entrusted with controlling it, etc. And indeed, if Bitcoin's reversibility is a fault, it's a fault that is created by Satoshi and advanced as an advantage by Satoshi. Fuck you, Craig Wright. Fuck you, Calvin Air. You guys are scum. Fuck off. Leave HODLNOT alone. Fuck you. BSV. There's shitcoins and then there's BSV. Fuck shitcoins, but seriously, fuck BSV. That was wrecked. It's a wrap. Up next, Phil, what do we have?
We are moving on over to the Hopium. The Hopium is brought to you by Represent. Check them out. RepresentLTD.com. That's right. You've got Walton sporting the nice black sweater with the crest. I've got the hoodie with the Bitcoin branding. Great quality, great prices. And also, don't forget to use the pleb-underground code for 10% off. RepresentLTD.com. Check them out. All right, guys. Hopium today, I think it's going to be pretty bullish. I mean, we try to make it relevant. Great tweet from Neil Jacobs on this day 8 years ago. This is why we always tell you to zoom out. Bitcoin is dying and will be remembered like pogs. The Bitcoin price, $217.87. And listen, guys, Bitcoin's been dying since the first day it ever came out. Okay. It's been dying. It's been dying all the way up, right? Even right now, as we speak, Bitcoin's dying. Anyways, we all know that that's not really the truth. Okay, but the main piece to this story, the main piece, I should say, to Hopium, is this right here. One digital asset class will make Bitcoin and cryptos increasingly attractive, says DeVere Group CEO. Financial advisory firm DeVere Group CEO Nigel Green says that the central bank digital currency, CBDC, will increase the popularity of cryptocurrencies. As more and more countries introduce their own CBDCs, I'm confident that the case for cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin will grow stronger. CBDCs might have many advantages, including convenience, efficiency, and transparency. I'm sorry. It's only going to be transparent to the people that have access to see what's going on. Like you, it's not going to be transparent for you what's going on. But what they do not offer the user is privacy and also censorship resistance. They don't want you to think about censorship resistance, right? They don't want you to think about that. He predicts governments will defend CBDC against the criticism by dismissing privacy concerns as overblown. But it's important to point out that these state-backed programmable digital currencies will provide governments greater oversight of citizens' transactions in real time. They're going to be a game changer in the financial system, as they'll be able to track and trace every purchase and monitor every penny of the money that's being spent. Green's comments come after a recent press release from the United Kingdom's HM Treasury and the Bank of England that says they are investigating whether to issue a CBDC, and a decision could come, this is the funny part, could come within a decade, within the decade. Okay?
There was a good little interview with a I can't remember her name now. I think she goes by Decentra Suze or something like this. But she's a main, You can look her up. She's on Twitter, but she's doing mainstream media interviews talking about how CBDCs are coming. No one knows about them. They should be scared as fuck. And the only way out is Bitcoin. And she said this very eloquently in an extended interview on UK television, on national television. I think, you know, the word's gonna hopefully get out more and more, but it fucking needs to. Like, and what's worse is that once again, Affinity scams, the CBDC, they're calling it Britcoin. Of course, British coin, Britcoin, little cunts. Like, fuck you guys. Fuck, like, all of you. Like, go away. Leave us alone. Scale down the government and let everyone get on with their lives.
That's right. All right, I'm going to wrap this story up so we can riff on this. A digital pound issued and backed by the Bank of England could be a new way to pay that's trusted, accessible, and easy to use. That's why we want to investigate what is possible first, whilst always making sure, and this is the key here, people, we protect financial stability. Okay? So they're giving us a timeline.
When?
What do you mean? You mean you don't feel like everything is financially stable right now? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's got to be 400% debt to GDP, and then it'll stabilize.
But you see, like, the
420.
Isn't this just gaslighting, though? Isn't this just gaslighting? Like, doesn't?
Oh yeah, completely.
Like, they're talking about maintaining financial stability. Like, really, really, what they're doing is maintaining their jobs. That's really what they're doing. I mean, at the end of the day. But I like that they said, I like the key there. They offer a timeline by the end of the decade. Okay? So in the next 7 years, they're going to scramble to put together
Agenda 2030, World Economic Forum, Agenda 2030.
Man, no way. Put that together. Like, isn't that insane? Like, don't you honestly feel like we're living in a psyop? All right, Eric. What are your thoughts on the CBDC being a good thing for Bitcoin? I mean, we always say everything is good for Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, if they try to implement a rollout phase, that's when we're going to see, like, Bitcoiners really take off. Like, there's a lot of things that I've done that, you know, I probably should be opting more in Bitcoin, but it just keeps my life, like, more practical. And, you know, I'm just, like, waiting until Bitcoin gets larger. But, like, if there was a CBDC implementation, then I'm throwing all my wealth into Bitcoin tomorrow. And I think that, like, that will be the primary catalyst when we're looking at, like, final boss fight. It's probably going to come down to, like, hyper-Bitcoinization starts once the CBDC rollout begins within the US.
Yeah, like, once the people who actually have lots of assets realize they no longer have any control over their assets.
Right.
And, yeah, like, yeah, they need to wake up. But, like, you could argue this, like, it's already true, right? You see, you know, your people's bank accounts get shut, your credit card, like, you're not able to spend your money when you want to spend it. I mean, it's because it's not yours and it's not money. But anyway.
Oh, my gosh. As you were explaining that, you know, it just made me think, like, that's exactly it. Like, the CBDC, you know, the CBDC will be a major catalyst. I mean, that could be the aha, that could be the thing that makes everybody realize what's been wrong with their money the whole time. Kind of like, and I hate to bring this up, but kind of like the same way that shitcoiners finally started to realize they were being grifted when ordinals and inscriptions came out.
Because I love that we didn't even talk about that this whole episode. Like, I made a rhyme, but, like, we didn't talk about it. Like, yeah. You know, well, maybe we'll talk about that sometime soon, but yeah, we're good for now.
No, we are. We're definitely good for now. Okay. So guys, look, that's the Hopium segment. We are going to move on over to very quickly. We want to talk to Eric about his book. Eric, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time. So tell us very quickly about the seventh property. Let's pull this thing up. Here we go.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I'm a finance guy and I, oh, sweet. We even got my own website there. Yeah. I got kind of a shit website. But
makes it easy.
Buy it through Amazon. It'll be quicker if you just go there and search the name.
Okay, if you want a good website, go see at 2140 Data. He's the guy that did Time Chain Stats.
That's a dope website.
He's building some good sites for lots of great ads, and actually starting to be some like bigger Bitcoin companies. Very, very competent web designer. TC as well actually is very good, doing some pretty cool stuff. But I don't think he has as much time. I think Ant, though, at 2140 Data is taking on some projects. So if you want a website done, that's the guy to go to.
All right, so Eric, tell us about
it. Yeah, the 30-second summary. I was a finance guy. I got into Bitcoin, and I was like, guys with my background needed like a really good book to get started. So it's like everything you need to know. I talk about history of money, how the banking system works, and like go into detail of like how money gets spread through the economy with the Fed, all the fucked up shit about the Fed, what it means like that our money's backed by debt. And that's like the first half of the book is just me going into all that and, you know, the history of how we even got to a central bank. You know, we had four other central banks that existed in the US before that. And, once I get all that, that like really like defines here's like the big fucking problem that we need to fix. And then I get into Bitcoin. I wanted to go into it at a bit more technical level than most resources, kind of like a good medium between like buying a programming or mastering Bitcoin and spending a ton of time getting in the weeds around it. And then also at the other end of the spectrum, you kind of have like higher level overviews of it with like analogies. I explained some things pretty technically, but I found a right balance. If you're somebody who's like serious and you want to understand it, this is probably your best starting resource, I think, and it's going to be the most holistic. And just all the questions I had when I was getting into it, like, what is Bitcoin governance? Like, how does it work with Bitcoin improvement proposals? Who decides this? What are the devs doing every day? Just like all these different questions that I think people have, and that's what I read it for.
That is absolutely
uh-huh. What's the best way that people can buy it?
Amazon. Just search the title. You can follow me on Twitter. Check out the Twitter account. I got a link there, too.
So right, like guys. I said, you know, Amazon is a good company. It's convenient, apparently, not just for people buying stuff, but also for people selling stuff. If you guys build a business that provides real value to people in the real world, you can make some money. Maybe not as much as Bezos, but hey, no one does, right?
So don't forget to check out Eric's book, The Seventh Property. And guys, this wraps up the weekly episode of Pleb Underground. Don't forget to like and subscribe and check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. If you want to stream us sats, check us out on fountain.fm. Walton, how do we end this?
Fuck shit coins.
That's right. Fuck shit coins, everyone. Catch you all next time. Yeah.